just is like, this is the man who was Brocklehurst. And I was like, broccoli was real.
Right? Lillian's ready to go strangle his ghost. Hey, everybody. And hey, Lillian. I hope you guys like learning facts, because we just watched something that gave us a bunch of new information that we didn't have before. How's it going, Lillian?
It's going so good. I love learning facts, Piper.
Yay, facts. Hooray. This used to be the Jane Eyre podcast, but now it's Facts Are Fun with Piper and Lillian. And we watched a documentary about not only the writer of Jane Eyre, but also her sisters, brother, father, family. All that jazz.
Absolutely. And I feel like the thing I learned the most watching this is just how deeply British some things can be in a way that is very different from my American sensibilities. This is so British.
Because you're talking about like the narrator and everything.
The narrator. And then also like, okay, so spoiler alert for the lives of the Brontes. But the way this documentary ends. So if this is an American documentary, how it would end would be like really inspirational music, shots of like teen girls reading Bronte books, like clips from the adaptions being like, even though their lives were cut short while they were here with us, their legacy lives on in their works of literature and their impact. And the way this documentary ended was a British man being like, and then Charlotte Bronte died, and she was the sixth of Patrick Bronte's children to die while he lived on, and he continued living his sad, sad life in a cold British town before he too died in his 80s alone.
Well, they also were like, let's just remind you about exactly how cram-packed this frickin' cemetery is, because 80 people died a month back then, and also probably their ghosts are walking around that cemetery, but who the fuck knows? The end. It's
like, oh, this, okay. The Bronte's books are sad because their lives were sad.
Oh my gosh, this documentary, yeah, it started right off the bat being like, just so you know, the town that they lived in was full of disease, it was poorly designed because the cemetery, like, corpses leaked into the water supply, so everyone was poisoned by dead bodies. Just like, holy shit, like, thanks for opening this way.
It's just deeply British to just tell us facts in a nonchalant tone. And then they added a bunch, like, he added like so much. So I have no concept of what version of a documentary we watch, because there's 1,000-hour-long documentaries about the Brontes. Mm-hmm. The one we watched is on YouTube. It's called The Bronte Sisters. It's the first documentary to come up on YouTube when you search Bronte documentary.
Thumbnail is like, they've taken one of the paintings of the sisters and they've kind of like put like a, I think, a cartoonish like filter over the top of it. But what you just said about how British the documentary is, it makes me think of, and maybe you've heard me tell this story before, Lillian, but there was a while when I was watching this show on Netflix called Escape to the Country, where it's essentially like American House Hunters, except this couple, British couples, are looking to find a cottage house in the English countryside. And so they do the same format as our American house hunting TV shows, where, you know, they present the couple with a couple of options at the end. They sit down, they're like, which house are you going to choose? But whereas in American television, the couple has almost always pre-chosen the house before they start filming, and then everything else is fake. Then with this one, it was so often that they would sit the couple down with like a little tea set and a little garden. They're like, so which of these three charming bungalows will you be living in? And the couple will look at each other and smile, and then they'll look at the camera and they'll go, none of them. And the lady's like, fabulous, join us next week and maybe someone will buy a cottage. And it's just like the end. I'm like, what the hell? Like, this is so bizarre. I'm used to people lying for my entertainment.
Yeah, come on, guys. Trick me. Make me pretend this was a happy story. Like, Jesus Christ, this was a bummer.
So, yeah, we learned about how the average age of death was 25. We learned about how everyone was sick. 80 people died a month. It was a time for disease. Lots of stuff.
Yeah, so I have some random quotes from this documentary that were fully wild to me that I think are really funny in the context of when they happen. And I think I'm going to save them like a little treat for us to have at the end of talking about the sad, sad lives of the Bronte sisters, which I do think was how this story was telling them, because they had cool things that they did, and he kept contextualizing them like they were so sad.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess what we learn is that their father was a fairly accomplished, like, poet and writer, and he got himself, like, a good job, you know, working for the church. And by accomplished, I mean, like, you know, people read his stuff, and they're like, you're good. And he's like, thank you. And he got a few things published.
Yes.
He wasn't, like, a famous writer by any means.
He also changed his name to Bronte because he didn't like his Brunty last name.
Because he was Irish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they said that he was a fan of Lord Nelson, which I have seen some funny things about Lord Nelson. But yeah, so he like took on, inspired by Lord Nelson, he chose Bronte because I think they said in the documentary that Lord Nelson was like the Earl of Bronte. I don't know. He had some kind of title or something.
Yeah, someone
like that
had something to do with Bronte, and it's like not like this is one of a thousand facts that they just like slip in with no context. Like, this was not, I think we should find a better Bronte documentary. We don't need to watch it right away, but this was not a good one. And I genuinely tried to find a good one, and I think I did a mistake similar to the musical episodes.
Oh my goodness.
Where like I started watching this and I was like, oh, this was not the one I thought it was. And then I was like, but I already told Piper to watch it. It's too late.
This totally felt to me like the kind of documentary that gets put on like an elementary school when you have a substitute teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And it like doesn't necessarily have to do with your curriculum, but it's just like whatever VHS she pulled from the shelf at the library. And she's like, let's just throw this on. It's probably educational. And it's just pretty boring. And like most of it was like just kind of, it looked like someone took their camcorder to these places in the Bronte's lives and like just kind of filmed. Because so often you can see somebody's like shoulder is in like the foreground, like they were on a tour with a bunch of people.
Incredible.
And they just filmed around the other people. So,
well, and this feels like the kind of thing that would have been put on in middle school, and you and I would have been separated about 10 minutes into class because we were sitting in the back just laughing at how friggin' ridiculous this is.
Yes.
It's like, here's the Bronte's house. And their lives were very Victorian in that they were sad and cool, but mostly sad.
But yeah, so their dad becomes a clergyman. He marries this lady, which the documentary was like, oh, we didn't have much info about her except for what he wrote about her. And apparently she was like lively and fun. And it's like, cool, nice.
Do you remember the nickname she used for him in her letters? Because I wrote it down.
Wasn't it like something saucy something? Tell me.
It was my dear saucy pet.
It's so cute. I'm like, dude, like, she is way too cool for you, obviously.
That's where the Brontes get their coolness, I'm so sure.
Yeah.
It's genetic from their mother who immediately perishes.
Well, so she gives birth to 6 children before she passes away.
And they literally, like, Piper was saying how many people died. It was not an exaggeration. He did 50 funerals a month in a small town.
Yeah. So bad news bears.
It's an upsetting place to live.
Very not good. Yeah, so he has these kids. After his wife dies, they talked about how he tried to marry 2 ladies and they both turned him down and it kind of turned him into a grump. And then he like became like a, like, he's like, I don't want to be around people anymore.
And her sister stayed and took care of them for the rest of her life.
Yes.
Despite the fact that she was from some like sunny, cute little hamlet, which reminded me of another story that we know about. Did you look this up?
I didn't look anything up, but it reminded me as well of North and South.
Well, minor spoiler alert for later in Charlotte Bronte's life, she became really good friends with a woman named Elizabeth Gaskell, who ended up writing her biography and a biography about her, which was mentioned several times in this documentary. She is the author of North and South.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. Very fun.
Yeah.
Aw. So yeah, he then just like takes care of his kids by himself. He sends them off to a school where it's like to teach the children of parsons and pastors and religious dudes and stuff.
And one of my top 10 favorite things on this podcast is Piper trying to remember the different names of like vicar, like special
baker,
assistant man,
candlestick maker,
Parsons.
Parsons. Well, so like I grew up Methodist, so we had ministers, but I don't think that's what this was.
And I had priests because I was Catholic, so we just We don't know your special British things. Vicar is, he was a vicar at one point, but then he was also a different thing that I looked up that's like an assistant to a vicar. And the way this British man said it was like, we all understand these very nuanced titles that people within the church have and had and will have. And but we just say, this man packed the facts in.
Yeah.
He was talking so quickly and saying such devastating things to me. And I was like, slow down and add any emotion to your voice so I know if I should be sad or happy about this.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, so we learn that the school that Charlotte and her sisters went to was inspiration for Lowood. And I personally liked that thing where she later confessed to her friend that she's like, I didn't realize that it would be so obvious that I was making a direct comparison to this one school, which says to me that once her book got popular, people were like, I know what school she's talking about. And then the school got a whole bunch of like flack probably for them being like, you're the place that almost killed Jane Eyre. And they're like, it's fictional. It's not us.
We only killed two of her sisters.
Yeah, it's fine. And probably tons of other kids who died in our negligence.
Well, and it just is like, this is the man who was Brocklehurst. And I was like, Broccoli was real.
Well, he's ready to go strangle his ghost. So, yes, I think that school killed one of the Brontes, and then the dad took the rest of them out of it.
So what happened was one of the sisters got sick. She got sent home. She died at home. Then her second older sister got sick, and he went, well, bring all my girls home then, because this is not okay. And then by that time, all of them were sick, but the rest of them got over it.
Yes. Though he also mentioned that, so they got sick at school, but they also mentioned that when he moved them into that house, they all caught scarlet fever while they were living there. Because
which is what killed their mother. So what killed their mother was moving into the house to tell the story about the rugs.
Yes. Oh my God. So I loved how chill the narrator said this. He's like, because of their father's like insane fear of fire and burning to death, he refused to have rugs and curtains in the house. And so like they all got really cold and sick, and then his wife died.
Well, and he's literally like, so you can't even imagine how cold it must have been in that house. Although Emily Bronte said it was fine.
Yeah. In her little diary, she's like, nothing warms me more than hearth and home. So yeah, I thought also it was like, oh my God, like just to know that your father is like petrified at the idea of burning alive. Maybe he must have like known someone that happened to or like had read about it happening. Like how or, do you just like, get that fear?
Here's the other thing too, is like this is one of a thousand facts that this man listed off in this show. That he cited a lot of things. Like it's not like they like documentaries, I'm used to them being like, we've learned from letters that this and this were true. Mm-hmm. He did that with a lot of things. And then also he just said stuff.
Yeah.
And so, didn't cite where he got it from. Like he just fully, so this is one of the quotes that I was going to say for the end, but I think I'll just say it now. He, when the mother died and he's talking about how this dude got rejected so hard by two ladies and it made him sad forever. And he decided to eat alone for the rest of his life. Yeah. He just went, but he unquestionably loved the children and thought it was for their own good when he like stayed away from them.
Yeah.
And they didn't cite that at all. He just is like, no, here's the thing. He fully ghosted his children, but he loved them for sure.
Yeah, trust me. I feel it in my tummy. He loved his kids.
And I'm not saying he didn't. I'm just saying it's weird that you don't have a source for that, but you're very sure. Unquestionably? What do you mean?
Amazing. One of my favorite facts that they shared in this is the way that the Bronte siblings all kind of like did this big like game of make-believe with each other. At first, like playing and making up stories with these toy soldiers that the dad brought home for the son and each of the girls. I love, by the way, he brought home a box of soldiers for his boy. He's like, oh yes, my heir. And all the daughters come in and they're like, yoink, this one's mine. I'm taking this one. And they're just like,
and they give them names and backstories, and the son's just like, yeah, I'm gonna play you.
Yeah, exactly. A big part of this documentary, and I'm sure this is the case with anything that's probably talking about the Bronte family, is very much just being like, the Bronte sisters were brilliant scholars, angels on earth, and absolutely impeachable. Their brother, however, was a drunk loser, and no one ever loved him. Just like constantly shitting on the brother, which it sounds like he had a pretty bad life, but just
which
the constant
I will say,
comparison.
I'll have to look this up, but one of our listeners, or somehow he found us, and I've talked to him a few times, and we're maybe going to read this book or maybe not. If we do, it's probably going to be a while. But if you guys are like, you know what? I feel like Bran, while Tarly always gets a not Tarly.
I was like, you just talked. Wait, I'm like, how did we get onto Game of Thrones? Amazing, Lily.
That just came out of me. That was so deep natural. Inside of me.
Yes, you're like, oh, let me just talk about this real quick. Speaking of great houses.
Branwell Bronte. If you feel Branwell Bronte just gets a bad rap and you're like, I wish I knew more things about him. Somebody should write a like fictionalized, based off of the truth, story about his life that's like the story of everything that this dude did where he can get some redemption is roughly the vibe I get from it. I did a bad job of describing your book, sir, and I'm really sorry about it. Anyway, we'll put that on our social and in the episode description if you want more on the Brontes.
Cool. Neat. But yeah, so they started making up all these stories. And then because they were big fans of this magazine, which he didn't go into much detail, but I assume by the way he talked about it, it must have been like a publication of like short stories and like fiction and stuff like that and adventures, I presume.
Yeah. It must have at least had stories in it.
Yeah. Because the kids are then inspired to write down their own stories. And this was probably my favorite fact from the whole thing, is that because they knew that their father would like disapprove of like the content of the stories they were writing, but they knew that their dad was like nearsighted and like couldn't see very well, and so they're like, oh, we're gonna like write all of our stories down in itty bitty little books in tiny writing because dad can't read it, so he can't get mad at us. I'm
like, that's incredible.
So cute and clever. Yeah, what happened next, Lillian, in the lives of the Brontes? You take over this narrative.
Well, at about age 50, so they just stayed like they were like 8 and 6. I think her older sister, I think Emily was 6. And Charlotte was like 7 or 8 when they went off to this other school. And then they got brought back. And there's now just these 4 kids. They're writing these stories. They're doing all this stuff. At about 15, Charlotte is the first to get sent off to school again. I think her brother did something, but it wasn't super clear to me. So at about 15, she goes off to school. She makes some friends. It's a much like better place, it sounds, than fake Lowood. And it's where she gets like a real education. And they talked about how that has an influence on her valuing education kind of going forward. Emily also gets sent to that school and then is so sad that Charlotte thinks she's gonna die. So yeah. She's like, Emily needs to go home. She needs to, she like writes her a letter to her dad and she's like, she's not doing well here. She just cries and walks on the moors. Please take her home. Aww. And so Emily goes back home. And then Anne comes, and Anne is also shy and kind of awkward around the other girls. But she kind of, she sticks it out and she figures it out. And she's also a little prettier than her sisters.
I know, they went into like quite detail describing how pretty the youngest one was.
They're like Charlotte and Emily fucking fugly, but Anne was like fine looking.
But like, yeah, she had thin pencil eyebrows, and like, I loved. Okay, the part is it Anne who has like the crush with the vicar or whatever, that religious boy. There's like a handsome like,
yes, she again, has a we crush don't know these terms that they talk ministers about for a while.
Yes, I thought it was so funny when they were describing like they're reading some description of like one of the sisters observing these two, yes, their flirtation, and whereas like they're sitting across from each other in church and the guy is staring at the pretty sister and he just keeps like sighing like he's in love, but the way they describe the girl is like, oh, she just so bashfully looked down and was so demure, and it's like, are you sure she was flirting back? Like, she wasn't just like asleep in the pew or just being a person, but
she didn't look at him at all, and that's how we know they were in love.
Yes.
What the hell is this documentary? Because I fully believe them that like they had this thing because they know when he died, and they have letters of her being sad when he died, because of course everyone that we meet on page is either terrible or dies within 6 months of them being introduced to their lives.
Then I don't think we need to like walk through every single detail, but yeah, after this education and everything, I think the sisters start trying to be like governesses, and it's not working out. But what was funny to me is that so like Emily and Charlotte, they like worked for households that they didn't enjoy, and then they left because on by their choice. And because like, yeah, I don't really like this, I'm out of here. But their brother, he was failing at everything already, and he tried to also be like a tutor for a family, but he was fired and let go because he just sucks. And they're like, get out of our house, stop teaching our kid.
This was another one. So like right before he like got a job as a tutor, so he'd already been like, he started out as like this sweet child who like also played with his sisters. And then he is trying to be an artist. And this is my favorite description. And that is also like, where did you, you're saying this like it's a fact, but you're not saying this at all. This narrator had the gall to say, was Branwell bad at art because of high expectations from his family? Or was he just a weak baby boy?
Yes, they called him weak. And it's like his weakness. And it's like, he damn, said dude. It's
probably because he was weak. And I was like, where are you getting that from? Like, it's the same thing as the unquestionable love the father has, where it's like, listen, the dad loved his kids. We're not going to cite that. That's obvious. Branwell, weak little baby. It's like so pathetic and sad. Spends all his money on drugs and alcohol, probably because he's pathetic. What?
Also, I bet he'll never get a girlfriend. Also, do you, okay, the, one of the, my favorite other favorite things is they showed like a self-portrait that the brother drew of himself. And God, yeah, he was not an attractive guy, if that's anything to be based on truth. Like, he's got this like big, long, crooked, pointed nose and zero chin. He's got negative chins. And then like the way that he's clearly balding and like combing his hair forward. And I'm like, you poor thing.
Life he's like, this you was a cool look and people liked it when I did it.
Oh, no. Oh, very funny. So yeah, they do this whole like trying to govern, to be governesses and stuff, and then they're like, you know what, let's try and start our own school. And they decide that their aunt is going to lend them some money so they can do this. And it's at this point, right, when they decide, it's then some of the sisters were already in Brussels, and then
they went to Belgium after that.
Yes, because they go to Belgium partially so they can like learn more languages, so they can be more desirable as teachers and such.
Yeah, and Anne was successfully a governess while Emily and Charlotte went to Brussels, which like the narrator was like, so weird that she hated a school where nobody liked her, but she wants to go to Brussels?
Yes. Well, because at first they talked about like her school, they attributed it to like her homesickness being only like so many miles away, but they're like, oh, but across the sea.
Yeah, which is like, sure, I believe you, because they've got like letters and stuff, so I'm sure that's true, but like to say that no one should ever try going anywhere else again because you didn't like school down the road, so you're probably not going to like Belgium.
It's like, yeah, well, guess what? Belgium is fashionable and it's a big city and it's cool. So while over there, we get another chunk of info about a big inspiration in Charlotte's life.
Which is the funniest part of this whole documentary.
So she like starts working. She's a governess in the situation too, I believe, for this family. And while like being a governess in this household, she falls in love with the husband.
I think he was her teacher. I think he was her professor. Her?
Okay, so she was. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
She was going to the school there. But she does work for them again later, and I'm not clear then how she's working for them and what she's doing.
Right. But essentially, she falls in love with a married man and then gets so mad when his wife is just like, can you not? Like, that's my husband. And she's like, she smiled and was pretty on the outside, but on the inside, she was a witch. And it's like, no, you are trying to take her husband from her. Like, there's so much. The curtains have been parted. We now know the inside workings of Charlotte's mind.
Well, and it's just like, it is one of those things where, like, the guy in the documentary is like, I don't know. For some reason, the wife and Bronte and Charlotte did not get along. And I was like, why are you telling us literally nothing about this man? Yes. Like, he seems like a bland potato. And these two women are interesting and want to hang out with him for some reason. Like, I'm sure she's like, he was smart and fun and thought I was smart and fun. And I was like, oh my God, this man seems like terrible. And his wife is probably like, can you please stop flirting with your student? And he's like, I'm gonna make it so she only sends me a letter once every 6 months about how in love with me she is.
Right, because the fact that like Charlotte was like sending these big love letters, and I assume the wife like saw them, and she's like, no, you cannot encourage this. He's like, she's allowed to write me like once a year though, right? And it's like, no. Like, stop this.
She goes back to Belgium. So she like doesn't get along with the wife, thinks the wife is a total bitch. Classic. Classic. Like, it's just like, I honestly, your wife seems so mean and you're so cool. And he's like, I know. I just like,
what's up with that?
I understand that you're in love with me, and there's nothing that either of us can do to rectify the situation of a young woman just falling desperately in love to the authority figure who's finally giving her the recognition she's always craved.
Yeah, exactly. So, clear evidence for inspirations for Jane and Rochester type scenarios, but also the way that, like, at least this documentary narrator, who we cannot take as a valid source of information, I don't think.
He's fucking buck wild.
But it's implied, at least in this documentary, I can also see, if we were to believe what has been said about her feelings towards the wife, that's I see a lot of that in the way that we see Jane thinking about Blanche in these, like, kind of drawing room situations, but... Anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because she's like, this woman was like, she seemed really nice and she was like so pretty. And everybody thought she was so much prettier than me and would tell me that to my face over and over.
They're like, oh yeah, it's you, the ugly student who always hovers around writing love notes to the husband of the house.
And like, just for a second, put yourself in the position of this man. You're a professor. You have the ego of a thousand suns, because obviously you do. You meet this young woman who's super smart. Like, she was, I genuinely believe, the Brontes must have been incredible people to have a conversation with. Mm-hmm. You're, like, really drawn in. So you kind of start flirting with her. And then this super smart, really young girl is, like, obsessed with you because she thinks you're fun and interesting. And you've always suspected that you were fun and interesting. And then your wife, like, so she starts helping you out and, like, doing stuff with you. And she's always telling you about how amazing you are. And that feels really good because this girl is cool and she gets, you know, she gets it. And she's not like those other girls who don't get it. She gets it. And your wife is always like, spend time with the kids. Like, come home. Why are you always working so late?
You're married to me.
I'm your fucking wife. Please stop buying presents for your student.
Don't encourage her obsession.
So what a bitch that just lives at your house. You like thought she was pretty, but it turns out like she's kind of mean when you ignore her and your responsibilities.
Yeah. It's like, geez, let me have a girlfriend on the side. Everyone does it.
I just need it for my ego. You can be home with the kids doing a lot of work and barely getting by. If that's fine with you, it's fine with me.
So yes, Charlotte Bronte and her crush should have run off just like Jane and Rochester.
No, it would have been so brutal.
So anyway, yeah, she has this fling. Her sister is super shy and doesn't socialize well, but she like also gets a good education. They come home. And you take over. I can't remember stuff after this. I know the next big things, but I don't remember what happens in the middle.
So they come home. That's when the letter writing happens. That's when, I think that's before, I get mixed up when Charlotte went back to Brussels and then came back again. But at some point, mm-hmm. Emily and Charlotte come home. Charlotte goes back to Brussels at some point. Branwell Tarly is just being a drunk idiot around town. He's constantly embarrassing them. Everybody's super sick of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I loved when they were talking about like when his drunk escapades were getting out of control. They're like, it was a very small village and everyone knew that he was the vicar's son, and it was really embarrassing for the family.
Oh, and they were like, plus if he stopped being the vicar, they would definitely be homeless. And I'm like, why are you raising the stakes in this already sad story?
He's like, you need to know what they were up against, why they had to silence their brother.
He was drugs all the time, constantly drugs. Mm-hmm. And then he was also doing that drink. And then he just was literally, they said that he was like a failure and embarrassment. And went into a self-pitying decline.
He had like a drinking buddy who like he didn't have, when he ran out of money, he would write his drinking friend and he's like, bring me gin.
And he like fully like, so he's fucking up all around town. He finally gets a job because he's an in there with his sister, Anne. So Anne has been working happily as the governess this whole time. Like, she gets along with the family. She really likes them. She like goes to the beach with them. Like, it's a cool time. That's where her like hot crush boyfriend that she definitely liked, even though she never looked at him, is. Then he dies. Her crush dies. Her mm-hmm. screw up brother gets a job working for the family. She quits a month before they fire him.
Oh my God. That would be so embarrassing if you like tried to help out your family member and then they like ruin everything for you.
That's why you don't. Oof. This is what, let's talk about enablement.
Yes. Oh my God. Does brother die before they start publishing?
Hold on. This is around the time that Charlotte goes back to Brussels, where she is she hates the wife of her beloved. Then she writes, she goes home, writes more letters. The wife gets mad, tells him to stop. And then she writes a shitty poem about the wife.
Yeah.
No, about, no, she writes it about him. But the narrator makes it sound like Charlotte thought the wife was the villain. And I'm like, no, this is Charlotte finally realizing that the professor was kind of an ass. And that she thought she liked him because, so she started making up fictional characters about who he should have been.
Right.
My God, did you miss the fucking point?
Because, yeah, the family, they run on hard times, and they decide, because Charlotte goes through her sister's belongings and finds her poems, and she's like, mm-hmm. these are good, we should publish. And her, I love how he's like, her sister was super mad at her for, like, invading her privacy. And after finally forgiving her, she's like, yeah, okay, let's publish these.
But they decide, like, I can just fully see this sisterly moment of, like, three sisters, one sister being like, oh my God, you have so many poems. Dad published poems. We should publish these. And Emily's like, fuck you. You publish your poems.
Yeah.
Like, you have so many poems. And then Anne's there is like, let's just all put some of our poems together and we'll publish all of them.
Exactly. Yeah. Someone has to be the peacekeeper. So, yeah, they all, they kind of like, it seems they put it, all their poems together into like one publication. Mm-hmm. And they choose these, I can never think of this word, like their fake author names. Their
nom de plumes.
Choose their nom de plumes, which they all use the last name Bell. That's where we get the Courier Bell and all
that
jazz. I think
it's Kerr Bell, not Courier.
Kerr Bell or whatever.
I got Courier right. Is like a person who brings packages places.
Well, you know, like, I didn't take any notes. I'm just going off what I remember.
I was like, you're looking at the right words written down on a piece of paper, and I'm pulling these straight from my noggin.
Yeah, because I didn't take notes on this one.
Because it was a Buckwild documentary, and why would someone do that to themselves?
Oh my goodness. So yeah, their first attempt to publish their poems, it like doesn't do very well.
How,
I think he sold.
How do you think it does? How would you describe that? If you had set up a documentary where three women that we know become famous authors, mm-hmm. and their works survive forever, mm-hmm. and you set up that they're finally going to publish works, would you maybe say they published a bunch of poems and then give you a beat of potential happiness and then go, it was a complete failure?
I think they're trying to build the suspense for you, Lily.
It's so brutal. We're like 40 minutes into this documentary at this point, by the way, and all we've heard is these kids get knocked down again and again and again. But Branwell's weak, and that's why he's always drinking.
They're like, even though like only two people bought the book, like they got good feedback, so they keep writing. Mm-hmm. And then they each like kind of take on like a story challenge. This is where Charlotte Bronte first writes the professor, mm-hmm. tries to get it to a publisher. Nobody bites. So she kind of sets it aside and then starts writing Jane Eyre.
Yeah, which the other two books that they sent all three of them to publishers at the same mm-hmm. time was Wuthering Heights and Agnes Grey. Mm-hmm. So Anne wrote Agnes Grey, obviously Emily wrote Wuthering Heights, mm-hmm. And they all got sent out to publishers, and there was only interest in the first two. There was no interest in the professor.
Right. Which I haven't read Wuthering Heights, and I haven't really seen Wuthering Heights. I've caught like a couple of clips. I am very curious to check out this story because, like, yeah, I know how famous it is, and the fact that it was her like very first ever mm-hmm. like thing, like novel that she wrote, and it's like still like top of the charts in classic lit. I'm like, that's crazy. That's really
yeah.
cool.
And they did talk about that a lot. So right after that, she publishes Jane Eyre, which we're gonna come back to. But I want mm-hmm. a note on that. They mentioned later in the documentary that. It did not get good feedback. So like Agnes Grey got like sort of dismissed. Mm-hmm. Wuthering Heights got like, are you fucking kidding me? Responses of like, this is wild in a bad way. Like, well, we don't like this.
I'm sure you caught this too, but one thing that I thought was so awesome is that they were like, well, the male English society was appalled that there's like a scene in the book where like she refuses her husband like in her bedroom, and they're yeah. like, that
Agnes,
is our right.
I think that was a later book that Anne wrote.
Okay.
And like, it was to the point, people were so mad about it. It was to the point where Charlotte was like, that's not who my sister is. And it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
Ugh.
No, it sounded pretty cool. That one scene that he read, like he read a chunk.
So I skipped over the Wuthering Heights summary because I do not know the plot of this. And I've been say, I think we've talked about doing it for a,
yeah.
what is it called?
A palate cleanser?
Thank you.
You're welcome. No, but I can see, because like this isn't like a spoiler or anything. He was like reading one tiny passage from it that involves at some point, I don't know if it was like a ghost or a person, but something like reaches through and grabs this main guy's like arm or wrist or something. And there's like broken glass on this window pane. And he's so desperate to be free that he like wrenches his arm down so that the other person's arm is getting dragged back and forth across this like jagged surface. And like blood is coming out and pooling across the table or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I could totally see why you'd look at, you'd read that and then look at your like cute little sister who was afraid to go to school. And you're like, damn, girl, like, where'd you get this idea from?
Oh, God, it's just funny. It's a funny, funny. I think we're conflating a few of these different stories that the sisters wrote. We're Jane Eyre ladies, so we're sorry about it.
Yeah. We also were given a like somewhat poorly constructed like hour long documentary.
I did this to you again.
It's fun. We learned some things. Who knows if it's true?
Yeah. And to be fair, all British narrators have the same exact voice that they're doing because they're all doing impressions of each other. So I watched the trailer for this one that was going to cost us money that was like well reviewed, and I was like, that is the same man. There is 100% chance that's the same man. It wasn't. There's no way this was the one people recommended. So then they published, so they published those two books. Then Charlotte gets a letter of rejection from the professor. But she goes, this is actually like the person who like wrote the letter of rejection was like, here's some good things about it. I'm just not going to publish this though.
Yeah.
So she ends up writing Jane Eyre and that gets published. And unlike her sister's books that are like either neutrally received or like kind of negatively received, and they're not huge successes, but they're not giant failures, like their poetry. This is like wildly well received. People loved Jane Eyre as soon as it came out, which makes sense to me.
Yeah, of course. I loved that it said something about like her publisher, like he couldn't put down the manuscript, like gave it to one of the other guys and he was also obsessed with it. And there was also a cute thing later on, which I wonder, they must have like mailed these to their publishers and stuff, because there's that thing that he says later when like one of the publishers finally meets Charlotte and he's like, oh, I thought you were a guy, but here's this like tiny strong woman, but okay, sure.
Yeah, yeah. that's a pretty famous story that I've heard other places as well, that so basically like they had been publishing under this pseudonym, they had been mailing these manuscripts into people, and then this guy publishes it them, they're all, the correspondence are over letters, and then Anne goes to try to publish a piece through this American publisher. Charlotte's publisher think, like, there's this rumor that it's all the same person, that there's just three pseudonyms, but it's all the same person. And so Anne and Charlotte are like, okay, well, we don't want to ruin your relationship with your publisher, so we should probably go and talk to him because we need him to know that. And he shows up and he's expecting this man to be there. And it's this tiny little lady. And he's like, hello.
It's like, oh, hi.
But you don't look like someone who wrote Jane Eyre. And she's like, you mean I don't look like the character Jane Eyre?
Who is also kind of me? Surprise.
Surprise. Surprise.
Surprise. Not a dude. So yeah, so that takes off. It's doing great. And then
somewhere in here, Branwell dies.
Was he? Yeah, I didn't know whether he died like before they started doing all of this, or if he was still alive at that point. But
he dies, like almost. I have in my notes, the order I have my notes is Wuthering Heights happens. There's a shocking reveal in the meeting. Branwell dies.
Okay, cool. So he's off,
and this is where the narrator also decides to add another personal color note. That fully pissed me off.
I think I know what you're going to say. Go for it.
Because he reads quotes from the dad and Charlotte Bronte's letters. Mm-hmm. And then also reads his own little thoughts on Branwell's death. Which is, all must have felt a sense of relief. Everybody in the house was super relieved.
He was dead, like, and gone.
Charlotte's like writing this like lovely passage that he reads immediately after this about how she's not sad for the man that they lost, but she's sad for the man that he could have been from the child that he was. And it's the ruin of promise that really breaks her heart.
Okay, because I thought that the way at least it was read, and maybe it was still just kind of vibing off of like what the narrator had just said, but it almost came across to me as if Charlotte was saying, she's like, I don't really care that my brother's dead. I'm just sad that he didn't like be as cool as we were. And it's just like, that seems kind of vicious. Like, you should be sad that your brother's dead.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, the way the narrator sets up so much of this is like, they are in the same way that all documentaries are telling you a story, right? The story that this man is telling is like, yeah, I mean, Branwell was cool when he was a kid. And then he got really into drugs and alcohol because he's such a pathetic weakling. And when he got into drugs and alcohol, he became a giant screw up who fucked up everyone's lives around them until they were finally glad that he died. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, except you're saying that the dad was devastated and that Charlotte was like really sad about the person that she lost. Yeah. And not the person he was, but the person he could have been. And you teed it up horribly and maybe you're the asshole.
Oh my gosh. So that guy's dead. Mm-hmm. And they continue to write more things. Mm-hmm. She does go back, kind of examines the professor, ends up publishing that. There's another.
No, that gets published posthumously. She writes Villette, which gets published. Mm-hmm. That is a very similar story to the professor.
So wait, you're saying that the professor wasn't published until after she died?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Never mind. Well, yeah. So she's essentially kind of keeps going back to this whole like, oh, what if a young girl was in love with this older guy?
Because she writes the coolest. She writes a book called. So Anne wrote more books. I don't know that Emily published more books. She kept writing, but they didn't mention any books specifically that she had published. Mm-hmm. But again, this is a bad documentary.
I know. I'm very afraid that like true Bronte fans listening to this are tearing their hair and their teeth out.
Like,
you don't know anything. You're like, we watched a bad documentary. It's not our fault.
We're going to do other things. It's not Piper's fault. It's my fault for sure. But so Charlotte wrote a book called Shirley, which is her quote Luddite novel, which I enjoyed that he just threw that in, like everybody knows what a Luddite is, which I'm like, I do kind of, but I had to Google to do a double check, so you're actually the asshole here.
I don't know what that is. What is it, Lillian? Educate
it's somebody
us.
Who's afraid of technology. So it's like her like technology growing is bad.
Gotcha.
Which like that doesn't even really describe, like, that's one of those things that people do where they're like, I'm going to use a big fancy word that people aren't going to know. And that way I don't actually have to explain anything to you. And I'm like, saying a Luddite novel does not describe the story beyond one of the characters doesn't like technology. yeah. Then Villette is the one that is really similar to the professor that gets published. And those two, I believe, get published before both of her sisters die.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And one of them dies before she dies. She gets to go to this like seaside town, mm-hmm. where I don't know if like she's just there to recover or if she knows people there or whatever, but it said that like she got to, you know, even ride in like a little trolley with a horse, but then the next day she was dead. And it's like, well, at least she got some time with the horses on the beach. So,
and just to give timelines for these things. So all three of those books that we mentioned, the first books, Wuthering Heights, Jane Eyre, and Agnes Grey, were all published in 1847. Mm-hmm. And in 1848, Emily Bronte dies at age 30. In 1849, Anne Bronte dies at 49, at 29.
29. Mm-hmm. So now Charlotte is alone, except for her dad, mm-hmm. and her aunt. I think her aunt's still alive. But they then start talking about this kind of like romance that she sort of has with this one guy. And I don't remember mm-hmm. much about him.
He proposes, her dad says, you suck, get away from my daughter. And he's like, fine. And then he leaves. And then he writes her letters trying to woo her. And then she gets engaged to him and writes a letter to her friend being like, oh my God, it's exciting. We're getting married and he's going to move back with my dad who hates him because I refuse to leave my dad. So he worked at the church for her dad.
Yeah.
And then her dad's like, you're not good enough for my only living child.
Yes.
And then, so she gets married and the documentary's like, maybe she'll be happy. She's pregnant. Everything's going to be great. Is everything great, Piper?
No, she has complications with pregnancy and passes away.
Uh-huh. She immediately fucking dies. And then the documentary goes, you like, I'm ready for the American ending of a documentary, which is, this is really sad. But don't think about the legacy that these women had. Think about the impact that they had, such short lives. Mm-hmm. And they were so incredibly smart and impressive and interesting. And they didn't have a happy ending or a happy, like, any of these other things that we think of that women need to be happy, but they wrote and they created something gorgeous that lives on long after them. And instead it's, and then her dad kept living for a few more years, well, sad until, and alone.
Yeah, until he was like 80. He got to his 80s lived, or something.
Yeah, he lived. So she died in 54 and he died in 61 at 81.
Which for that like lifespan that they were talking about earlier of like everyone dying at 25, how weird must that be for you to be like, why am I still here?
Well, it's also, it is one of those things where like, those numbers of life expectancy are super skewed by child mortality, which is, we saw that demonstrated in like these young people dying unexpectedly. And also like they talked about a lot of the conditions were based off the fact that like this was people who grew up here, mm-hmm. had really weak lungs because of the shitty air conditions, right?
Yeah, the conditions. Yeah, air quality.
The conditions, sure. Of the air. Air it's quality.
Like they had like, really bad air conditioners.
Terrible. It was.
That's why that one girl is like anti-technology. Because the air conditioners killed everyone. Yes.
I would say quality. A Luddite perspective at that time in the place that Charlotte was living of like, I think this technology might be killing us. Not unreasonable.
Yeah, if it's talking about like the kind of like factories and like the like fumes that they're putting out and how dangerous it is to operate the big machinery, sure. Yeah, there's a lot of danger there.
Yeah. So apparently after her death, a bunch of people wrote things about her that just fully weren't true. So one of her friends reached out to Elizabeth Gaskell and went, can you write like an actual book about this actual person that you and I knew?
Yeah, your
and
friend.
And she wrote this book about her that I don't know that I have it in me to read right in this moment, but sounds like they were trying to describe a super cool person instead of just listing off a very fast version of how and when everybody died.
Yeah. No, that would be cool. We can add it to our list for later on. But even though I just remembered, they also said in this documentary, even though the dad initially disapproved of Charlotte's husband, after Charlotte died, like the husband just like lived with the dad and they were just like companions and friends. Yeah. So the family stuck together. That's nice.
Yeah. And then the husband ended up going, I actually hate it here now that everybody I've ever met here is dead. So I'm going to go to Ireland. And then the documentary goes, so he moved to Ireland and then he died. And then they're like many, many years later in 1803 when he was in his 80s. And I'm like, okay, you could have said that. So let me tell you, British people, everybody sit down. And for anybody of our audience who's British, I'm a little bit making fun of you, but you guys make fun of us all the time, so I get a little bit of a pass. And it's well deserved when you make fun of us. I get it. Just all of you sit down really quickly and let me tell you about these things. They're not bad. They're called feelings and emotions. And it's going to be okay if you feel some of them, because it's not Victorian sad times anymore. Okay.
Good lesson. A good lesson to keep at heart. Yeah, no, I think this just felt like a very straightforward, like, mostly here are the facts. Also, secretly, I'm a Charlotte Bronte fan, so I'm going to raise her up and shit on her brother. But I'm not biased. I'm the narrator. And the end. But yeah, so... It was a documentary.
It was fine. We learned things. Their lives seem way more interesting, and I'm very sad.
I feel like though, like, and this can easily be a stereotype of the time where it's like, yeah, everything sucked back then. But also, I'm sure there were plenty of moments when you weren't just, you know, thinking about mortality and all this other stuff that were actually wonderful and great. So I would love a documentary that shows us if those times existed for these people. I'd like to learn more about some of their happy times as well. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's easy to see how they could take from these life experiences and, you know, put all of this emotion and intensity and drama into their writing. So...
Well, and you can see how somebody who lived this life, right, that Charlotte lived, where from the outside, it doesn't seem like anything good was happening. And it doesn't seem like she had much experience. And there's questions around, like, how did Emily write Wuthering Heights, despite the fact that she was afraid to go to the school a few miles down. And I think that passage in Jane Eyre, where she is saying women have just as much of an inner life as men do, and they should get to experience that as much as men do. I think that's saying something. That's because you imagine you're looking at Branwell, who is actively drinking and on drugs, and the only person who gets resources and money to do things and experience things without begging for them mm-hmm. is your brother. And you're like, we could be doing things. Like, yeah. That's not to shit on him. That's to say, like, these books are these women crying out and being like, you might look at our lives from the outside and be like, how sad and small. But look at all of these things that existed in our minds and how mm-hmm. incredible that was.
Yeah, that's very cool. So, yeah, this is our first documentary. We now have some facts, which we definitely need to do some research on our own to confirm.
I did based do on a this little guy. Bit of Googling. I think he got, like, the dates were right. The places they were right. He fully did fuck up the order in the Jane Eyre summary of some of the things that happened. He says... specifically, the one that I remember was he said, she gets proposed to by a vicar and then decides that instead she's going to be a teacher. And I'm like, no, she's a teacher when she gets proposed to, you idiot.
Amazing. How dare that guy.
I know.
He should listen to our podcast and figure it out.
He really should. You wouldn't know how to do a Jane Eyre speed run, right? We've got a bunch of examples for you.
Yeah.
It's fun and funny when you do it our way.
I feel like it doesn't seem quite right to give a ranking to a documentary.
No.
Because it's what are we going to rank their lives? Be like, I give her life a 4 out of 0. I don't know.
Give Charlotte's life a 9 out of 10. I wish she'd lived a little bit longer. But
Branwell gets a 1 out of 10 for just fucking up and being so weak.
And being so weak. Yeah, wow. Damn, I truly hate that man for saying that over and over and over again. Like, he just had no. He wasn't like what I like about documentaries is when they take like. Truth, like facts that we know about people, letters that we know about people, and then string them together to tell a story about this person. Mm-hmm. This man just kind of went, here's a bunch of facts. And then unrelated, I think people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol are weak. And I'm like, what the fuck?
So speaking of good documentaries, William, have you ever seen anything by Ken Burns?
Yes. My dad was hugely into Ken Burns. We watched lots of Ken Burns documentaries when I was a kid.
I love Ken Burns documentaries. I got 2 as Christmas presents this year. But so when this documentary started, it had like the same kind of text format with like just, you know, simple text and then like a red line underneath it. And I was like, oh my God, is this going to be Ken Burns? And then like 30 seconds in, I'm like, oh, it's not Ken Burns. Nope. That would be great. But unfortunately.
I can't even imagine if you went into this documentary and thought that it was going to be Ken Burns.
Oh, so that would be a huge downside.
Bad time.
I just thought to myself, I'm like, that just must be like an industry standard, I guess, that kind of text format. Or maybe they were just trying to be like him. So who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Ken Burns, please make a documentary about the Brontes.
Or if you already have, please send us an email about it. We no longer have access to the regular Google. And I don't wanna.
Thanks,
but we
Kenny.
Are gonna, the next Bronte thing we're gonna do is watching the 2022 Emily film. So that looks really good. I have heard good things about it. I'm excited. But we had this idea that we wanted real facts about the Brontes before we watched it, and I am regretting this decision.
I'm really excited because, I mean, for many reasons, but this movie also has an actor that I have a crush on in it. So I'm excited. I don't know his name off the top of my head, but he's the guy, you wouldn't have seen these because you don't like scary stuff, but he's in The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor. He was also in the newest Invisible Man movie. She's like this really tall, super sexy, like Irish or Scottish guy. I think he's Scottish. He's hot. That's all I'm saying. He's hot. He's just like a big dude with an intense voice and a cute face.
Okay, sorry.
She said
it tried to make me go look at Emily in Paris instead of Emily the movie, and I don't. That's not the same.
No, we don't want that show.
Is his name Oliver Jackson?
Here, let me just look it up myself so you don't just have to guess who's who.
Keep all this in. No, yes, this is him. He was in Haunting of Bly Mansion.
Oliver Jackson Cohen.
Yeah, he's hot.
He's hot. You're right. He's just really tall and he's got a great voice. So
this is the thing. This is for those of you who are like, how is it that their shorter episodes taper off into this weird this is why our longer episodes is because we have a lot to say. And frankly, this documentary is bad.
Yes. So, like, yeah, this just, like, devolves into us Googling hotties. And we're like, who else is hot? Oh, how about this guy?
What is something we actually want to talk about? The Brontes aren't not interesting. The yes. documentary we watched is bad. And we're trying to save you guys from making the mistake we did.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Or specifically I did.
Oh, I was going to spiral into some social plugs.
Yes,
and
please.
Say, if you guys have either a Bronte family fun fact that you want to share, yes. or another actor that you just think is hot that you think we should be aware of.
We're equally interested in both things.
Yes. Please, you can reach out to us. We are on social at AirBuds. DM us all of your favorite dudes and ladies and or fun facts about writers. But you can also send us emails about those things airbuds@gmail.com.
And next week we are going to be looking at essentially, so I've been trying to find a full version of this. It doesn't exist, but we had a lovely, lovely listener whose name is not in my notes, but will be in my notes next week. We're going to be talking about the Jane Eyre Ballet. So we have a bunch of clips. We're trying to find a way to watch this short film about it. We have lots of information kind of about who was in it. So we're going to be talking about that because it's incredible. It looks incredible. And I would like to do something that's good. I would like to consume Jane Eyre in a way that is enjoyable. And we're at a point where we're watching a lot of things that aren't in English anymore, which doesn't make it bad, but it just means that I don't speak that language. And we're looking at terrible Bronte documentaries, and I want to watch something that is good. So,
amazing.
We're going to go look at that next week. And if you're sitting around going, I have like $3 or $8 or $15 every single month that I wish I could just light on fire. What could somebody do with that, Piper, that's better than lighting it on fire?
Well, you know, you should maybe suppress your inner Bertha and instead embrace your inner Pilot, Miss Temple, and or Jane, because those are the lovely tiers of our Patreon. And we would love to not only keep you from burning that money, but to give you something in return, apart from our love, but some fun content that we've curated just for our patrons. So maybe consider donating if you like the show and you want us to keep going. Thank you.
Thank you. Fully going NPR pledge season.
Yes.
this program was made possible by listeners like you.
I was such a PBS kid when I was little that whenever they had the fundraising drives and it interrupted my cartoons, I fully believed that if I got my parents out of bed and I'm like, dude, this show is interrupting Arthur and I need to watch Arthur, so I need you to like pledge this money. And they're like, Piper, that's not how it works. We're not going to spend $50 so you can have a mug. Go to bed. And I'm like, no, they're ruining my cartoons.
Why were you up in the middle of the night watching PBS while your parents were asleep?
I don't know. It's like the weekend and they're sleeping because they're tired.
I love that for you. I love the idea of your parents being like, it's one hard week. We're finally going to take a nap. We're going to sit Piper down in front of the TV and we're just going to take a nap. And you're like, guys, I need a mug. It's only $50.
PBS says we need these tote bags.
How have we been living without them? I've never seen you tote anything around in a good bag before.
If you do 100, I get an Arthur plushie. Where's your credit card?
You don't even have to give 100. We won't, if you just send us $100 in the mail, we will find you an Arthur plushie.
I have one. I can send you mine. I will willingly part with my Arthur plushie.
We're going to auction the Arthur plushie off. It's worth way more than $100 now.
Amazing.
If you thought this was good and better than the other documentary, please give us 5 stars on the internet.
Yes, thank you very much.
We're going to stop holding you hostage now.
We love you. Thank you for listening. Happy Jane Eyre reading, watching, and documentary consuming.
Bye!
Bye!